Welcome to the Successful Mind Podcast, where you can expect cutting-edge information and strategies relating to success mindset, leadership, wealth creation, and relationships, all based in universal law and David Nagel's own experience as he rose from minimum wage forklift driver to multi-million dollar business owner. So, let's go.
Hey everybody, David Nagel here, and welcome to the Successful Mind Podcast, and happy Valentine's Day. Valentine's Day can be a phenomenal day for people that are in love and in great relationships, and it can also be a hard day for people that maybe are out of a relationship or lost a relationship or feeling lonely or sad. My lesson today is to bring some joy and some wisdom and a piece of my study history with love to everybody that's out there. I was thinking about, what do I want to teach today? I've taught a lot of things about Valentine's Day and relationships and love and those things in the past, and I was thinking, you know, our mantra for the year here is transformation, and about making personal transformations, business transformations, relationship transformations, health transformations. And I was thinking about, the core, of course, of a transformation is really self-love. Now, you'll hear me mention this maybe a little bit in other podcasts that I do, because I don't think we could talk about this enough. I probably could do a 3-day seminar on it. Maybe I will at some point. But here's something that's really fascinating. I've never really seen anybody do something with any significance until they want to do it. Meaning that very often we know we should do something, whether it's intellectually or emotionally or through the advice of other people or professionals, but very often we don't want to do it. And something magical changes in us when we want to do something. Now, I think that the first relationship that we need to begin to master in our life is the relationship with ourself. And back in 1998, I went through a mentor study program with my mentor, and he took me through this book. The book is called The Power of Your Supermind with Vernon Howard. And I learned something that month that I studied this book at the time, and I've been studying it ever since, because Vernon's gone now. I think we lost him in the 80s. But you can go to his website. Somebody runs it there. It's called a newlife.org. And we'll put that in the show notes for you. Vernon was a mystic. And there's no question about it. And I know things are written a little bit different today, but sometimes it's great to go back to some of the old works. And this, although this not being too old, you'll see the language differences in it a little bit. I'm going to read heavy to you today. I want you to know that ahead of time. Meaning that I'm going to read from this book pretty extensively. But the reason that I'm going to do that is because it's a brilliant lesson that's in here. And I'm teaching it in a certain way. I'm bouncing around from one page to another. It's not necessarily going in a specific order, but it's going in a beautiful order for you to understand the lesson. And the lesson is really about coming in close contact with yourself, owning yourself, loving yourself, being empowered by that, truly empowered by that, not just a lot of the fluff that you hear out there today about, you know, self-empowerment and all that. I mean, that stuff is great. But the question is, how the hell do we do it? How do we really get to a place where we're empowered? And this lesson literally changed my life. It's no hyperbole on that. If you practice what I'm going to teach you in this podcast, it'll have a complete transforming effect upon how you show up in the world. And like I said at the beginning, that's really our first relationship, right? To learn to have a relationship with ourselves, and when we do that, then we can learn how to show up in a relationship with others. So, with no further ado, let me get this thing going here. Okay, this is, again, this is all, this is not mine. This is credited to the late, great Vernon Howard. And again, the book is The Power of Your Supermind. He says, no man is really interested in getting what he craves. He is really interested in being at peace with himself, but he doesn't know how. Now, you could take those two sentences and you could study those probably for a year and get something out of it every time that you went back to it. What he's really talking about here is that very often the person that we're being and the things that we're doing are really out of another form of pressure, another form of acceptance, another form of appreciation that we want to get from other people. And we think erroneously that if we get more things from others, sometimes if we get more things for ourselves, that we're going to be at peace, that we're finally going to be there, that we're going to, you know, I have arrived type thing. And nothing can be further from the truth. This is about an inside job that we do that allows us to come into a very quiet peace and harmony with ourselves, and that allows us to show up differently in the world. So again, he says, no man is really interested in getting what he craves. He is really interested in it being at peace with himself, but he doesn't know how. This is why your desires and ambitions change as you learn to think from the supermind. Now, Vernon uses the word supermind. The book is called The Power of Your Supermind. And what he's really talking is your subconscious or your superconscious mind. It is the place where that we commonly refer to today. You probably hear it as your higher self. Okay? He says, what you used to consider valuable now becomes worthless. What you formerly thought was foolish now is prized. Now, again, think about what he's saying. What you used to consider was valuable now becomes worthless, and what you formerly thought was foolish now is prized. I think that we can all relate to that if we just take a look at our life. If we look back 20 years, maybe 10 years, maybe a year ago, there were a lot of things that were important to you then that you now think is completely worthless. And back then, you thought what people were doing or what you might be doing now was totally foolish. That's awareness. That's a shift in awareness and a shift in maturity as a person begins to go through life. The most helpful thing that you can do for yourself is to be real. To be real is to be everything. The destruction of falseness begins with its detection. Here is one way to start down the road toward being a real person. Observe your inner state when you're with others. Are you uneasy, timid, or do you feel compelled to talk? Next, observe yourself when you're all alone. Are you more at ease inwardly when by yourself? No doubt you will find this to be so. So here's what to do. Work at being just as relaxed when you're with others as when you're all alone. Refuse to permit the mere presence of others to make you nervous. Gradually but surely, you can banish compulsive behavior when you're with others, and you can remain totally relaxed. There is no barrier to your achievement of real selfhood. The supposed barrier is only a mirage of wrong thinking. Take the social situation that any social situation. There's really no such thing as a tense or uncomfortable situation with others. What really bothers you are behaviors and explanations that you falsely think that you owe others. You owe nothing to others except to be real, and they owe you nothing but the same to you. Do not expect anything from anyone. They have nothing of true value for you. You alone can give true value to yourself. Man, if that is not some of the most enriching information to change your awareness about yourself, I don't know what is. I mean, I think, you know, I remember one time Billy Graham said many, many years ago before he passed away, he said, when we hear the truth and we deny it, it leaves deep subconscious scars. And that, what I just read and what we're going to continue on here with, is just a really deep, powerful truth. And I think you can feel that it resonates with you, that that's really true. We don't owe anything to anybody else. We don't have to be a certain way because it makes other people uncomfortable. And we don't need to be uncomfortable around anyone else because they're uncomfortable being around us. He says, when man fails to get on in life, usually it's because he's looking for solutions that don't exist. Nowhere is this more evident than in the human relations. Mind is like a hard chunk of ice floating down the river, constantly colliding with other chunks. Plato pointed out that correct principles of human relations are based in cosmic science. As long as a man insists upon his own shallow rules, people will bump into people. But all can be different, and we can learn cosmic science. We can react rightly or wrongly to unpleasant contacts with people. Here is the super way, mind, for success. Stand aside from yourself and watch your reactions. That's the first thing. Stand aside from yourself and watch your reactions. Number two, don't resist, condemn, or seek to change the reaction, but quietly watch it come and go. Maybe you heard bad news. Okay. Watch how painful thoughts and feelings grab you in an uncomfortable squeeze. That's all you do. Merely watch and be aware. Don't call them your own thoughts, for they are not. They are foreign intruders who seek force to force themselves upon you. They have no real power whatsoever. Repeat the two steps every time an unpleasantness occurs. Again, number one, stand aside from yourself and watch your reactions. Number two, don't resist, condemn, or seek to change the reaction, but quietly watch it come and go. In time, an astonishing change will take place within you. You will see things differently. Exterior events will lose all of their ability to hurt, frighten, or puzzle. You will realize that unpleasantness is not something to fight, only something to understand. Nothing builds inner strength faster than the simple practice of taking full responsibility for your reactions to whatever happens. This includes your reaction to new ideas when you meet the supermind. You can command. You are in command of everything that is below your own psychic level. If you are above cruelty in yourself, you cannot be commanded by cruelty in others. Now think about that. If you are above cruelty in yourself, you cannot be commanded by cruelty in others. In other words, you have a different level of awareness. It doesn't touch you. If your level is higher than hysteria, you are immune to the mass hysteria of mankind, expressing itself in fighting and deceit. And we got a lot of hysteria going on in the world right now. If we rise above it in our mind, we can't let it shake our inner world. What commands you? You're commanded by anything above your own psychic level. This is why man, on a low level of esoteric understanding, has problems with both himself and other people. His various conflicts are above him, out of reach of his handling, like storm clouds. If you feel yourself commanded by people and events, set yourself at ease. Remember the one item that is always subject to your possible control, your own clarified mind. Your mind can control everything because of its supreme power to react correctly to everything. In the outer world, people may seem to exert command over you, as with unjust taxes. But no one can control your mental reaction to outer events. Nothing in the outer world can touch a man living fully from his inner world. A situation becomes what the mind calls it. But what happens if the conditioned mind refuses to call it either good or bad? What then happens? Well, a kind of miracle. It becomes simply a neutral event without power or harm to give temporary excitement, followed by the inevitable swing over to the gloom. You grow into true command as you uplift your level of being thorough and more insightful by extending a warm welcome to esoteric facts and especially by extinguishing a false sense of identity. Add daily to your stock of information by going over to the principles of the supermind. Before performing any task, we must learn the nature of the task. Learn what you must do. Your information can then change into victory. People are not what they seem. There's much difference between their exterior and interior states, as in the between the inner and the outer sides of a house. Whenever you meet someone for the first time, you can be absolutely sure that he is totally different from what you think he is. The mistake is our own false assumptions. For instance, we assume that a certain person is a calm type. We have made two mistakes. First, we do not see the emotional turmoil he suppresses when in public view. Second, at the moment of our observation, there is no particular crisis to arouse or reveal his panic. Surface calm will explode sooner or later, as many a bride or bridegroom discovers too late. Our task is to see people as they are, not as we want or need to see them. Then we make no mistakes. Now, how can we do this? Since other people are invisible, psychologically speaking, how can we see them as they actually are? Now, this is a great question, right? This can be accomplished by understanding ourselves. When you frankly face your own motives, you see the motives of others. By understanding your own desires and actions, you understand why others act as they do. Self-knowledge is the unlocking key to the insight into others. Perhaps in a moment of intense self-honesty, a person sees in himself a selfish motive masquerading as generosity. Not only is he healthier and happier than before, but he can no longer be tricked by others, which have the same masquerade. It works both ways. You understand other people as you understand yourself. As you win insight into your own actions, the behaviors of others also become clear. Whatever happens in your social relations is quite valuable, providing that you let it shed light about yourself to yourself. Human encounters are beneficial challenges to our fixed ideas. The best challenges are those revealing us to be less noble than we assumed, for the shattering of imaginary ideals is the shattering of unseen chains. Just as we become acquainted with our nature through self-observation, we can learn about the other man by watching him in daily action. We should not do this out of mere curiosity, nor to form a critical viewpoint, but because we want the facts about human nature. Watch, for instance, how a man behaves when accused of something, whether the accusation is accurate or not. Notice whether it arouses anger, indignation, or accusation in return. The egoless man, the man thinking from his supermind, has nothing to defend, therefore cannot be upset. But the lesser man, with a gulf between himself and his supermind, will react offensively and defensively. Arthur Schopenhauer supplies us with a test. A man shows his character just in the way in which he deals with trifles, for then he is off his guard. This will often afford a good opportunity for observing the boundless egoism of a man's nature and his total lack of consideration for others. And if these defects show themselves in small things or merely in his general demeanor, you will find that they also underlie his action in matters of importance. Although he may disguise the fact, do not trust him beyond your door. Be independent of others. By steady self-observation, we can see the difference between living from society's subtle demands and our own center. Any discomfort that we feel is trying to show us difference. Plead for nothing. Chase no one. Refuse to trade yourself. Stay right where you are. Do not be like a man sitting in his own living room and thinking, "I must hurry home." You're home right now, right where you are. Whether in a factory or in a field, you are with yourself, and that is all if you see it. That is all you need. We must be able to take or leave people before we can take them beneficially. A compulsive need for society indicates lack of self-command, which means placing ourselves at the mercy of others in order to get what we assume that we need. And if we ever find a man who will not in some way take advantage of his human weakness, we have found one man in a million. Now, this next piece I find specifically important. Never deal with a neurotic or unpleasant person on his terms. Deal with him on your terms or not at all. This means you break the relationship as far as the inner world is concerned, even though it continues within the outer world. Never sacrifice your inner integrity to anyone, anytime, anywhere. Note the following truths that I told my questioner as follows. So here he has a question and answer thing that he did. And the person asked this question, why am I so ill at ease with people? And Howard responded, this is so because you behave to please them rather than to please yourself. This pleasing of others is based in anxiety. You try to please them because you want certain benefits, but fear that you won't get them. What are the reasons, the things that people want from you? The response was, oh, it seems an endless list. They want money, sex, friendship, approval, praise, acceptance, security. But is it wrong to want these things? And Howard responded, it is wrong to surrender yourself in order to get them. Such self-sacrifice breeds self-dislike, producing pain and hostility. Try to see the agony of living under the psychic domination of another. Notice the anxiety of waiting for another's approval or letter or appearance. You don't want to live like that. There is something entirely different. Francois Fenelon, and I've used this quote in many live events, showed sharp insight into the human situation by asking this, what do you not have to suffer to keep the respect of those men you dislike? I'm going to say that again. What do you not have to suffer to keep the respect of those men that you dislike? In other words, how many times do we change who we are and suffer in that change in order that people that we don't even like, that we have their respect or their admiration, or that they stay in our lives? The realization must come that many of your friendships are not friendships at all. You must see how you're trading your inner treasure for breakable toys. With such a realization, you will no longer give that which cunningly is demanded of you. Then they will leave you. They always do. Having drained you of all they can get, then they depart. Your task is to bravely bear the temporary shakiness arising from your aloneness. Be patient and have no regrets. You have done the right and necessary thing. Every abandonment of a crutch brings shakiness at first. All is well. Remain quietly with your aloneness until it tells you its supreme secret, and it always will. No human being on earth has power to do anything for you or against you. If you can see the significance of this, your relations with a spouse, a friend, a stranger, undergo bright transformation. You will never seek to influence others. You will never worry whether they like you or not. You will be at peace with everyone, even though they are not at peace with you. This must be seen with a spiritual mind, the supermind, not with human logic or with your conditioned reasoning. We prefer believing in the ability of others to help us because of our own desires towards them. But this arouses friction for others, and for others have desires that are contrary to our own. A desire toward another creates an unconscious insistence that the other should and must behave the way we wish. When he does not, we feel cheated and resentful. We falsely think the wound came from the other person's selfishness, when in fact it came from the false desire. When we no longer have false desire, painful disappointments are no longer possible. Whenever the human relationship, you must not form the psychological attachment to the other person. Now think about that. Whatever the human relationship, you must not form a psychological attachment to the other person. You must freely let him come and go as he pleases. You must not try to hold him or her to you. Even if you hold him physically, his heart will always be far away, which will be painfully sensed to you as you feel it. When living from your supermind, the continuance or ending of a relationship does not depend upon you, but upon the other person. This means you're free. Remain psychologically detached from everyone. This means everyone. No, this is not cold indifference. It's something extraordinarily warm. It is genuine love. If you will do this, everything changes. It changes because you make no conscious or unconscious demands upon another. Strangely enough, you're in charge of the relationship because you have no charge at all. The reason why so many marriages and friendships fall apart is because each party tries to receive what the other cannot give. Two people meet, they thrill at the newness and the novelty of each other, and when the excitement passes, as it always does, emptiness is seen. Then comes the despair and the seeking of a new direction, and so the vicious circle whirls endlessly. The seeker fails to realize the futility of finding in another what must be discovered in himself. Even if a sad and lonely person were to meet someone with lofty love, the seeker could neither recognize nor appreciate it. We can recognize true love in another only when we have at least a taste of it in ourselves. It is folly to call a relationship based on a desire by the name of love. We like to do this because it all sounds romantic, but love has nothing to do with it. Genuine love is quite another thing. Only an awakened person can love. It's absolutely impossible for you to be disturbed by something that you don't want or that disinterests you. This is why we emphasize the need for freedom from false desire. The understanding of desire abolishes what Eastern mystics call tanha, that is, a painful craving. Suppose you were given your choice of two peace potions. One of them kept you restful only when events turned out to be the way that you desired. The other kept you perfectly happy no matter what happened. Which would you choose? The second one, of course. Yet, at this very moment, millions of unhappy people and billions of events choose the first. Why do they select the very potion that makes them unhappy? Please listen carefully. It is because they have a false idea about what will make them happy. If we insist that happiness comes from having a lot of friends, that is a false, pain-producing idea. If we believe that the easy life will be ours by leaning upon our spouse or upon society, we're in for a shock. To state it another way, we wrongly think happiness occurs when we get what we want. What does occur is a thrill, ego satisfaction, or sense of power, none of which is happiness. Tolstoy points out that when false happiness reaches a certain peak, it turns to grief. This explains the sudden drop into despair of people who finally attain worldly success. What they hoped was a solid mountain turns into a dissolving cloud. So here we are back where we started. I want to give you a single idea for your constant reflection. Make it your business to grasp its full meaning. No man is really interested in getting what he craves. He is really interested in being at peace with himself, but he doesn't know how. Man, that is a powerful teaching. It really is. I would take this and I would listen to it 100 times. Listen to it once a month for a year. Keep it in your awareness, keep it in your consciousness, and I guarantee you it'll teach you more about yourself and self-love and why you're actually doing the things that you're doing, the hidden motives behind them. Go in peace, my friends. Make it an absolutely fantastic day, and we'll see you on the next episode of the Successful Mind Podcast. Bye. I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Successful Mind Podcast. I appreciate you tuning in. Check out the show notes for links to any resources mentioned, and while you're there, leave us a review. I read them all. I'd love to connect with you on social media. My pages are also listed in the show notes, and if you'd like to continue learning with me, go to davidnagel.com/start here for a free download. Until next time, make it a great week.